Hey there, hi there, Ken Plume here with another patron exclusive for you. This is another edition of my Real Crime Panel. And that's the panel where the panelists all pick films that they feel are criminally overlooked and try and make a case for them, not only to the audience, but also their fellow panelists, who are then able to either rebut or support their compatriots' choice. And for this edition, recorded live at Pensacola, Florida's Pensacon, on February 24th, 2018, we have returning panelist Mystery Science Theater and Riff Trax' own Bill Corbett, and brand new to Real Crime, from We Got This and Thrilling Adventure Hour, Hal Lublin and Mark Gagliardi. And again, this is exclusive to you, my patrons, as a thank you for your support. So I hope you enjoy it. That's right. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Good. This is afternoon, right? It's afternoon now. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Real Crime Panel. How many people have attended a Real Crime Panel before at other conventions? Okay, so what this is, basically, our three guests that have come out, are about to come out, have each chosen a film they feel is criminally overlooked. Sometimes it may be for a good reason that that film has been overlooked. They're going to present their case for why they love the film and think that you should give it another chance, but our other panelists are going to be able to pick a clip that either is going to support that position that maybe you should give it another chance, or go, I don't know what your idea is on this thing, you're crazy. And this is my clip supporting that. So each of them have chosen a film. We're going to go through those clips in the discussion. So right now, we're going to bring out our three panelists. First, a big round of applause for Mr. Bill Corbett. And keep that going for Mr. Hal Lublin. And our third guest, Mr. Mark Gagliardi.
Everybody.
So we're going to roll with this. Now, they have no idea what clips the other people on the panel have chosen. So this is going to be just as much a surprise to them when they view the clips. We're going to roll right into this.
Can I say one thing real quick?
You already are. Go ahead.
This is just some housekeeping work, since we didn't do that
Sure.
at the beginning. Feel free to take pictures, but don't video record or live stream it.
That's all.
I'm just passing along information.
Oh, that has now changed? Oh, they asked. I don't care one way. If the house cares, then that's fine.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Geez, great bit, Mark. They really laughed at that.
They're
one.
Not. I said it was housekeeping. I didn't say I was doing bits.
The old housekeeping bit.
Do we have Bill's mic?
Hello.
Hello.
There we go.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We were so close. There, you happy a bit?
So you know what? We're going to go in to our first clip of the afternoon, and afterwards, we're going to let Mark let you know why he chose this clip.
Oh, is it mine
first?
So
this is the first film.
Yes.
Roll it.
Don't do this.
You can't just leave us here.
Yes, I can. Unless Ben tells me the next clue.
There isn't another clue.
Ian, listen. Why don't you come back down here and we could talk through this together?
Don't speak again.
Okay.
The clue. Where's the treasure? Ben.
The lantern.
Dad.
The status quo has changed, son.
Don't.
It's part of Freemason teachings. In King Solomon's temple, there was a winding staircase. It signified the journey that had to be made to find the light of truth. The lantern is the clue.
And what does it mean?
Boston.
It's Boston.
The old North Church in Boston, where Thomas Newton hung a lantern in the steeple to signal Paul Revere that the British were coming, one if by land, two if by sea. One lantern under the winding staircase of the steeple. That's where we have to look.
Thank you.
Hey, you have to take us with you.
Why? So you can escape in Boston. Besides, with you out of the picture, there's less baggage to carry.
What if we lied?
Did you?
What if there's another clue?
Then I'll know right where to find you. See you, Ben.
No!
Well, there's no other way out.
Come back!
You need us, Ian!
We're all gonna die.
It's gonna be okay, Riley. I'm sorry I yelled at you.
It's okay, kiddo.
Okay, boys, what's going on? The British came by sea with two lanterns, not one.
Ian needed another clue, so we gave it to him.
So, Mark.
Yes.
That was your film.
I.
What was your film, Mark, for the audience who may not be familiar with it?
You guys, National Treasure is a national treasure. I love this movie.
And now you know why he picked it.
Yeah, just so I could say that. No, I picked this because I love this movie. I think this movie does not get the respect that it deserves. And that clip in particular, I didn't know which because I sent you three. I know I was like, I'm like, he's like, send me the clip that you like. I'm like, I like this one and I like this one and I like this one. For me, this movie is like that clip in particular. It's everything about it that I love. It's a little bit of a, oh my God, I wish I had remembered that with the whole one if by land, two if by sea. Cause I'm a huge, history nerd, specifically that time period, founding fathers era, which is all through this movie. I like every actor in that image, in that scene. Like they're all, there's no one in that scene that I couldn't just watch do, anything.
I really love Sean Bean's staircase acting.
Yeah.
He's just acknowledging that there's a staircase around them.
Yeah. There's a minimal amount. For those who don't know the movie at this point, John Voight and Nicolas Cage are father and son, and he has spent the entire movie naysaying everything that his son does. And this is the first time that the two of them work together wordlessly. He uses that one if by land, two if by sea thing, the lantern. And they both all have the same knowledge pool. So that father-son moment I love. And there's a little dessert of Nicolas Cage in that clip doing just the right amount of crazy where Sean Bean's elevator goes back up and he pauses for a stupidly long amount of time and then goes, no, like there's just enough Nicolas Cage crazy. Like I love everything about this movie.
Now, did you see this in the theater?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this was a big attraction. This hit all your buttons. You knew you had to go see this in the theater.
I knew I had to see it in the theater. And now, whenever my family is together, we always watch National Treasure together as a family. Yeah. Well, I know, right?
Well, you know what? I think we're going to go on to Hal's clip and take a look. And then we'll discuss with Hal his thoughts on the film.
The legend writ, the stain affected. What legend? There's the legend of the temple treasure. The stain affects the legend. How? The key in silence undetected. Wait. The legend, the key. Well, there's something. A map. Maps have legends. Maps have keys. It's a map, an invisible map, so now...
Wait a minute, what do you mean invisible? An invisible map?
The stain affected could refer to a dye or a reagent used to bring about a certain result. Combined with the key in silence undetected, the implication is that the effect is to make what was undetectable detectable. Unless the key in silence could be...
Prison.
Albuquerque. See, I can do it too. Snorkel.
That's where the map is. Like you said, 55 and Iron Pen. Iron Pen is a prison.
Or it could be, since the primary writing medium of the time was iron gall ink, the pen is just a pen. But then why not say a pen? Why say Iron Pen?
Because it's a prison.
Wait a minute. Iron Pen. The iron does not describe the ink in the pen. It describes what was penned. It was iron. It was firm. It was mineral. No, that's stupid. It was firm. It was adamant. It was resolved. It was resolved.
Hal?
Well, if this movie had just been 2 hours of him trying to figure out that riddle, that would have been great. I like this movie. I don't know if it's underrated. It might be perfectly rated. And I honestly, from that, I picked that clip, not sure whether that was in defense of Mark's position or on the other side of it. This movie occurred during the golden age of Nicolas Cage as we know him now, as like an odd person who has somehow lost connection with how human beings talk and act and process information.
2004, prime, yeah.
We're in that prime era. And it's just, this has, the weird parts of this movie, you either like or dislike Nicolas Cage at this point. And this movie will not convince you one way or the other. You won't be swayed. It does also feature Justin Bartha, who is hilarious. Wonderful. And find the, like, just great comedic performance. Like, you kind of forget that they put him in The Hangover and gave him nothing comedic to do, mm-hmm. which is kind of a crime given how funny he is. But, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's a very good movie. I think if you like history, the part of me that's very proud to be from Philadelphia loves all the sequences that take place in Reading Terminal Market and around Independence Hall. I think it.
Can you give us the rest of your critique in a Philly accent, please?
But I think that what I know about that film, more than anything, is that, you know, it was pretty successful in its time, and I think it's perfectly appreciated. I don't think it's underappreciated, and I don't think it's overappreciated. I think it's perfectly appreciated, and people remember it.
I won't stop until it has a 100 on Rotten Tomatoes.
You are going to die very disappointed. I'm so sorry.
So essentially, Hal, your position is it exists.
No, it's like a good movie. Go watch it. I don't think it's – if I were talking about criminally underrated movies, I would never put this on the list. I think it is – I think it is perfectly rated for what it is. Some people like it. Some people don't like it. It's worth a watch. Well, I'm sorry I don't have a stronger – like I have a very strong – this movie
I'm
is
okay
in the
with this film.
Opinion.
But it's the most medium movie ever.
But I also get the buttons that it presses for you.
Yeah.
And I like the sequel as well. I don't even, the sequel's not as good as the original.
The sequel does have the best moment of Nicolas Cage crazy when he turns to his father and he goes, "You need to stop overreacting."
Yeah.
Which is one of my all-time favorite movie moments.
I think with that, we're going to move on to Bill's clip.
Thank you.
No!
Got it. Go on.
Abigail! Come on! Jump!
Blast them.
That's all right. This is all we need. Well done, Gaze. Well done.
You all right?
No, those lunatics.
You're not hurt, are you?
You're all lunatics.
You hungry?
What?
Are you all right?
Still a little on edge from being shot at, but I'll be okay. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, well, I'm not all right. Those men have the Declaration of Independence.
She lost it?
They don't have it. See? Okay. Now, can you please stop shouting?
Give me that!
You're still shouting, and it's really starting to annoy. And you would do well, Dr. Chase, to be a bit more civilized in this instance.
This is the real one. What did they get?
A souvenir. I thought it'd be a good idea to have a duplicate. Turned out I was right. Actually, I had to pay for the souvenir and the real one, so you owe me $35 plus tax.
Genius.
Who were those men?
Just the guys we warned you were going to steal the Declaration.
And you didn't believe us.
We did the only thing we could do to keep it safe.
That's dumb! Give me that!
You know something? You're shouting again.
Pretty sure she was swearing, too.
Well, we probably deserve that.
Well done, Gates, indeed.
Well done, Gates. Well done.
I think I'm pretty much dittoing Hal's basic take on this. Is that I love the whole idea of this. You know, it's like a good version of the Da Vinci Code, in that it's about, you know, the codification of things and unearthing them and, you know, making an adventure out of it. And it has the sense not to take itself quite so seriously, and also to keep it a little simpler. So that's great. But I think it's the same thing you said about Nicolas Cage. And I picked this scene because he obviously got to like improv a couple of his lines there. Like, are you hungry? It's like, what are you talking about, Nicolas? There's a weird, slightly misogynist thing that goes on through this whole scene where he keeps telling her to shut up and keep her voice down. It's like, what? And she falls in love with him in about 5 minutes after that. And Justin Bartha is like hero worshiping him. And it's just like when he's at the center of things, it's chaotic. And unless you can buy into him as this solid, cool presence, you know, I think it just feels a little askew. And meanwhile, you're surrounded by Diane Kruger, who's an amazingly good actress.
And hiding her accent well.
But they also do have a little moment where they account for that. Like the employee of the,
National Archives.
Yeah. National Archives. He goes, well, your accent doesn't sound American. And he goes, I grew up in Germany, but I'm an American citizen or something like that. It's like, yeah, you could just probably skip that.
Just in case a little bit of the accent sneaks in later in the movie.
And it does leak.
We covered it.
Also, were they concerned that was the part people were going to find incredulous?
Right. Yeah.
But
not hanging from
doors. My most favorite meta commentary on this film is within that scene where he's describing what has just gone on. And she goes, that's stupid. And tries to take it from him.
Yeah.
And that a way of just shutting, that could have shut down the movie right there.
And she's a respected academic. That's stupid.
Yeah.
And you have like these absolute war horses like Sean Bean, who I think is amazing in everything.
Yeah.
Amazingly enough though, this movie like violates a rule of moviedom and he lives at the end, which is really fucked up. But when you put
there's
him in
a beheading scene after the credits.
Sorry, guys, I had to go. But when he's in a room with Nicolas Cage, it's like, these are two different genres of people. They can interact. And John Voight, too, who has just become weirder and weirder as the years go on. He just seems like
if you're going to get two actors to play father and son of weird.
Oh, yeah.
It's the two of them.
Get Nicolas Cage and the guy that winked after an anaconda ate him.
Right.
It's kind of like the Avengers of acting styles.
So I am entertained. I saw this movie once, you know, when it came out, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I sign on to the Lublin thesis.
Well, that was National Treasure. We're going to move on to Hal's Choice. Here's his clip.
Wakanda.
The great spirit sent us rain.
Wonderful. Wonderful and nice dancing.
Nice does not make rain.
Yes or no? Can your god make rain?
Yes.
But he doesn't.
That's right.
Why?
Because that's not his department.
But if he wanted to, he could?
Yes.
What kind of a god do you have?
Don't say my gods. He's your god too.
Don't give them to us. We have enough troubles with our own god.
But there's only one god.
What does he do?
He can do anything.
Then why can't he make rain?
Because he doesn't make rain. He gives us strength when we're suffering. He gives us compassion when all that we feel is hatred. He gives us courage when we're searching around blindly like little mice in the darkness. But he does not make rain. Sometimes, just like that, he'll change his mind.
Hal, your film?
That movie is 1979's The Frisco Kid. I don't know. Yeah, a few people here have seen it. The reason why I chose it for this is not many people have. It's not the best movie that Gene Wilder ever made. Certainly not the best movie Harrison Ford ever made. However, I think it's a really great Gene Wilder performance that kind of gets overlooked in a career full of great performances. The movie certainly has its flaws and insensitivities, as any comedy made in 1978, 79 would. And I would not defend those at all. But to me, this movie, and I hadn't watched it in a while when I picked it. I watched it again to pick this clip. And I realized, as someone who is a non-practicing Jew, but who culturally identifies very strongly with being Jewish, that this film was a little meant more to me than I expected it to. And because obviously it's something that meant a lot to Gene Wilder, enough to make a movie about it. And it also is a good sampling of Harrison Ford's ability to play comedy, which I think he does well. It's not a comedian. But I think it's a forgotten film, and I wish more people were just aware of it and aware of how good, if nothing else, Gene Wilder's performance in that film is, because he doesn't hold anything back. In typical Gene Wilder fashion, he goes all the way with it, and I think it's great.
And this is Harrison Ford coming off of Star Wars and pre-Indiana Jones.
Yes.
This would have been around the time he was filming his cameo in Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
So just for a little context, so he was hot enough to cast in this coming off of Star Wars, but hadn't had his second iconic role.
Yes, and Gene Wilder had already done all of his
Young
work
Frankenstein,
with Mel Brooks.
Blazing Saddles.
And had he already done Silver Streak by this point? Had he already started working with Richard Pryor?
Yes.
So this is like in the middle of the middle to the end of his hot period where he was doing most of his work. And it's just a film that gets forgotten in the shuffle. And I get it. It's not the best film he ever made, but it's not terrible. And I think it's worth a watch.
Well, we're going to go on to Bill's clip.
There she is, Abram. That little shortcut I was telling you about. Going to get us to San Francisco 4 days earlier.
Good.
Maybe we can give a little context as to the plot of the film and why, what Gene Wilder's purpose is in making this trek. Hal, do you want to give a little context before?
Sure. This movie is about a rabbi who I think is in Poland.
From Poland,
who's sent to America to be the rabbi for a congregation in San Francisco that has no rabbi. He is the childlike person at his yeshiva. Nobody likes him. So they're trying to get rid of him by sending him to America. He lands, I think, in New York and is instantly kind and trusting to anybody around him, which results in that highway robbery.
Yeah. I must admit I had never seen this movie before. I was just vaguely aware of it, and I really liked it. And, you know, the main reason to me is Gene Wilder. I just love him. I knew this was a labor of love for him, and that goes like 95% of the way for me. It is a really good performance because he – you know, when you've seen Gene Wilder do so many like higher, just sort of more comic roles, sillier stuff, you keep waiting for it, and it doesn't never really comes. Like here and there, it just sort of peeks through. And in this moment, this was the moment I realized this is not going to be a Gene Wilder movie as I'm used to them, because it's brutal. It actually, I don't know if you could see, it was pretty dark up here, but he's just beaten up. He's just trusted these guys. He's done them a big favor, and it's a big con to get all his money and his stuff. And they take his rabbinical stuff, and they mess around with it, and they throw it out. And it's really heartrending in that moment. And there are a couple of moments like that. There are also some beautiful moments where he bonds with a community of Amish, where he shows himself to be brave and stalwart and moral throughout. And I agree with you. It's a little bit meandering. Harrison Ford is okay, but a little weird in it. He tends to mug a lot when he's doing comedy.
He's a Gurner.
Tell me is this true that originally the cowboy was going to be John Wayne?
John Wayne. And it was health issues that prevented John Wayne from taking
which
what would be the Harrison
Ford. Very different movie. This like old, crabby, homunculus of a guy instead of young, sleek Harrison Ford. But it's hard to hate any, it's hard to not love anything that Gene Wilder is in, because I think he's just given us so many great performances, and he's incredibly lovable. And underneath all this, even if it was confusing, it has a really lovely message, which is stick to your moral principles, and, you know, and he's got really solid ones underneath all that childlike, innocence. So.
I think we're going to move on to Mark's clip.
Get me out of this! Oh, please! I'm afraid! I don't want to die! Please!
Of Kidruti again Bayad Kiro Yabaye Korim.
You hurt Peter. I never did anything wrong.
Jesus. Where do I get into this?
Who the hell are you?
Me, rabbi. Jewish rabbi. Come from far away, across big ocean. I read much books about Indians.
You don't speak English very well.
Adaji, ini hui day.
He's a holy man, chief. Speaks to the spirits every morning and every night. And he's so good and kind and gentle. Just a sweetheart of a man. Well, even when we robbed the bank and the posse was chasing us, he wouldn't ride on Saturday. Oh, sirree. Because that's his holy day, and he didn't want to make his spirits angry.
Can he make rain?
Rain? You should have seen the rain. I mean, buckets of rain coming down day after day. I didn't know what the hell we were going to do with all this stuff. And if you want to talk about snow...
Don't talk about snow.
You came for this.
Yes.
I have read this book. Did not understand one word. What do you call this book?
Torah.
Torah?
The Torah.
Torah.
Good.
Would you trade your horse for Torah?
Yes.
Your horse and your boots?
Yes.
And your clothes?
Yes.
And everything else you own?
Yes, everything.
Even your knife?
I have no knife.
No knife.
No, you have no knife.
No.
If I give you back Torah, will you purify your soul through fire?
Yes.
If I let you go, may I keep Torah?
No!
Your way day. Rabbi with no knife. You are a brave man. And you, who speak to Indians as if to little children. Your heart is big. Not as big as your mouth. But you have good feelings inside.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks very much.
I had to Google whether this movie was a comedy. Seriously, I was like, this clip to me is everything that is right with this movie and everything that's wrong with this movie in one clip. In that, I'll start with my problems with it. Tonally, I feel like this movie is a mess, tone-wise. I think it never quite figures out its tone. There are weird moments, like, Harrison Ford is weird. Like you mentioned before, Harrison Ford is weird in a comedy and just super muggy. Like, even in that clip, like, this is a real dramatic thing and he's, so it's really that's odd to me. They got an Italian guy playing an Indian chief.
I recognize him from somewhere, and I realize John Travolta's dad in Saturday Night Fever.
Oh my God.
That's who that is.
Yeah. So they got an Italian guy in this, and the woman, that shushes Harrison Ford and then is later sitting next to him feeding him, you just saw the entirety of her role in the movie. This movie does not pass the Bechdel test. So there's a lot of like bizarre things about this movie that it was really unsettling for me. That said, I think it's a perfect example of Gene Wilder being the calm center of this sort of insane storm and 100% of the reason to watch this movie. He is in what I and what I think is not a great movie otherwise, I think he is. Everybody should see this movie just to see Gene Wilder. And also, there are logic leaps. This was one more thing I want to say about this. There are logic leaps in this movie that drive me insane. Like, people behave in ways that it's like, oh, come on. Nobody behaves like that. Even the clip that you showed was like, he spends the first several minutes of that going, what are you doing? What, he's robbing you. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, it's not super well written.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been better off if he wrote it, but it wasn't right. His script.
And the script was kicking around for a long time. I was reading about this, and it's the same director that did Longest Yard, and what was his other?
His other comedy?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's this director who does like these weird dark comedies and had no idea what to do with a sweet and earnest lead character. So, but the sweet and earnest lead character is fantastic.
Well, I think we're going to move on to Bill's choice.
You, man. Now, wait a minute. This is what you want. So, Sheila, is that okay with you? Is it okay if Claude just sits here and looks at you for a few minutes before we go?
You've got a hell of a nerve, young man.
I got life, mother. I got life, sister. I got freedom, brother. And I got good times, man. I got crazy ways, daughter. I got million-dollar charm, cousin. I got headaches and toothaches and bad times to like you. I got my hair, I got my head, I got my brains, I got my ears, I got my eyes, I got my nose, I got my mouth, I got my teeth, I got my tongue, I got my chin, I got my neck, I got my tits, I got my heart, I got my soul, I got my back, I got my ass, I got my arms, I got my hands, I got my fingers, got my legs, I got my feet, I got my toes, I got my liver, got my blood, I got life, mother, I got life, sister, I got freedom, brother, I got good times, man, I got crazy ways, daughter, I got million-dollar charm, cousin, I got headaches and toothaches and bad times to like you. Oh, got my head, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, my mouth, I got my teeth, I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my tits, got my heart, got my soul on my back, I got my arms, I got my hands, I got my fingers, got my legs, I got my feet, I got my toes, I got my liver, got my blood, got my guts, got my muscle, I got life, 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 life.
That is the 1979 movie version of the musical Hair. I don't get a sense that a lot of people, especially like a generation after, remember it that well or have even seen it. And it was directed by Miloš Forman, the Czech director who did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, had never directed a musical before. It was choreographed by Twyla Tharp, New York prominent choreographer, never had been involved in the movies before. Starred Treat Williams, as you may know, that was the thing that sort of put him on the map. I think a really underrated actor across the board. And as you can see there is Charlotte Ray from, she hadn't started, was it Full House? I'm blank.
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life, sorry. She hadn't started Facts of Life yet, but, you know, she had a little cameo there. Annie Golden, who is a punk singer. She's now in the Orange is the New Black. She plays the kind of mute woman, but she was the little hippie ragamuffin there. It's just, to me, it is a really great adaptation of a musical that was only 10 years old at the time. So it was a lot closer. I'm old enough to remember when it came out and people saying, well, it's been so long. This kind of doesn't play anymore, this hippie stuff. That was in 1979. And it's, you know, much farther away relatively now. But I think what it did mostly is that it added a bit of a plot. It opened it up for the camera. It got a little more playful. The original musical is really, it's wonderful music. It's Ratto and Ragni and McDermott are the trio who put the whole thing together. But it really is more of a, as they call it, just like a love-in. And, you know, there's some storytelling and everything, but it's a big tribal thing. And they added a story to it. The original creators did not care for the movie, and I can kind of see why. It got way far away. But I think it really was effective, and it has a story about militarism and draft and everything like there that I actually found touching upon rewatching it. So,
well, here is Mark's clip.
We saw at one another shoulder, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new tone.
I love this movie. I loved this movie. I was so excited when I got a chance. So I've watched it since being assigned to watch it. I watched it again after. This clip to me, can I say something quickly though about the first clip, the one that you played? The concept of, like little save the cat moments that make you love the characters. This movie is nothing but moments that make you love all of this, like, mini band of hippies. I don't know if you noticed in that scene where he's dancing across the table, the band of hippies and the help, the waiters, not a single plate or there's nothing broken because they are respectful of the dishes. Like, they're like, he just wants to go talk to this girl. So, and they're walking in front of him as he's walking down, and they're clearing all the plates out of the way. And the only thing left on the table at the end is one spinning plate when the cop shows up. And I just, that moments like that, I think are great. I think the ending of this movie is beautiful because the you lose the protagonist, you know, you lose the character, but you lose the man, but not the movement, I think. And that moment of where you just see a field, you're like, what is that just a field? What's happening? And then everyone just rushes in. That to me, I think is really powerful. Plus, I just love that song. I'm a huge, huge fan of this movie. But there is, I only have one problem with it. And it is at the end of the movie. And it's the reason I initially picked this clip. Another reason I initially picked it. The end of the movie, for those who don't know the plot, I apologize. This is a huge spoiler that you just saw. Burger takes Claude's place.
Burger is Treat Williams.
Burger is Treat Williams.
Who was dancing on the table at the, in Bill's clip.
Burger temporarily takes Claude's place. Claude, who has gone into the military, he's been drafted into the army, takes his place so that Claude can go visit their buddies who've driven cross country to see him. In that moment, Burger, mistaken as Claude, is sent to Vietnam. So the most stalwart of the hippies is sent off to Vietnam because they think he is Claude Bukowski. And yet on his tombstone, says George Burger.
Right.
When the entire premise of the thing is that everyone thinks he is Claude Bukowski.
Right. Yep.
That was my only problem with the movie, is at the very end, you're like, but the...
Yep.
But it's a... I just want to watch hippies.
No argument. No argument. I should mention the one person I left out there is Beverly D'Angelo, who was the bride at the end of the table. Mm-hmm. Who this was, I think, the first thing that really put her on the map.
Yes, and then she went out to be,
she's really great.
As the rich girl,
the rich
joins
snob them. Versus
before
snob,
moving on to the vacation film series.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we have Hal's clip. From a completely different film.
This is when the very beginning of the film.
Moon is in the seventh house, and Jupiter aligns with the Mars, then peace will guide the planets, and love will steer the stars. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Age of
John
Aquarius.
Savage there.
Understanding, sympathy and trust abounding. No more falsehoods or derisions. Golden and living dreams of visions. Mystic crystal revelation. And the mind's true liberation. Aquarius. Oh, Aquarius.
If you say anything bad about Twyla Tharp,
it's the fact that you hate horses, right?
The reason why I chose that clip is I wanted to show you exactly where the movie lost me. I'm sure that the work of Twyla Tharp is beautiful on a stage, but when I saw those hippies making horses dance, I was like, fuck this, I'm out. Here's my theory on pop culture. I think it moves like a waveform. And when we get to the bottom of the waveform, there are movies that are celebrated that might be in a time where maybe not the best stuff is being made, where they're like, let's put it all behind Xanadu and see what happens. This feels like I enjoy musicals, but I also hate them.
You're half right.
Right. The thing I don't like about them is the way that they tend to deflate dramatic moments by turning them into song, understanding that that's supposed to pump it up. And this film adaptation for me did that over and over and over again. I would get pulled in when I saw Bob with his family, with his parents. Like, that was a nice moment. And then I didn't like any of the characters. I especially didn't like the guy who abandoned his wife and child who like gets confronted at one point and is like, this is your child and you left me behind. And all he does is he's like, shut up. He's basically like, shut up, woman. This is my life. And I'm supposed to be behind that because the love movement is bigger than the child that you had with somebody.
No, because the other guys, the rest of the hippies immediately pull him aside and then they wind up all together and she goes on the road trip with them. And
yeah, I don't know. It was
the hippie dressage that lost you.
This was hard to get through.
Man, Twyla Tharp, if you are a fan of Amazing Dancing, though, this whole movie is nothing but a fantastic dancer.
Yeah, I mean, geez. And if you want to see some horses do a high step, you will.
Are you saying that hippies and cop horses didn't dance together in the 60s?
Well, I remember in those Time Life commercials, there were a lot of pictures of it. I just didn't think it would be like that in film.
But it was a weird period for musical adaptations to film because you have Milos Forman, who is not known for musicals adaptations. You had John Huston doing Annie. Which was a weird choice to do, Annie. It seemed like weird.
I certainly wouldn't say that it's not an eccentric movie. It has its languors. It has its, you know, its dud moments. I was old, but not old enough to have been a hippie. So when I grew up, I was more like, fuck the hippies, you know? But this, if anything else, made them a little more, I don't know, it made it a little more human. They were kind of irascible, dumb. Some of them were good, some of them were bad, but you know. But whereas I think the original musical was really reverent because the characters of Berger and Claude were all hippies and Sheila, they were all hippies and they were based on, the guys who created it. And it was really like, preach, we have the Age of Aquarius. And this is a lot more skeptical about it, which I appreciated.
And that I think is where it breaks down for me because it kind of misses the point of the actual musical.
You missed the point of that horse dancing scene. I'll tell you what I thought when I watched that scene. I saw that and I was like, see, the horses get it. I bet those square cops and Hal don't.
Sucker.
You're right. I do want to give a shout out to Nell Carter, who is also in this. This was around the time she was doing Ain't Misbehaving and winning Tonys.
Her voice is essential to this movie because she can get way up there above everybody else.
And she was so in the original Broadway cast as well.
Yeah.
She was in that along with Diane Keaton, which is that White Boys, Black Boys, those two songs.
Yeah. Diane Keaton?
Diane
really?
Keaton was in the original hair cast on Broadway. Yeah.
Yeah. I think to Ken's point, this was kind of we're kind of at the bottom of the waveform for movie musicals in terms of them being made in a way that's particularly faithful to what you love about the original musical. Although all the songs are there, they can all sing. I love Treat Williams. I'll tell you how much I love him. I think he was better in the substitute movies than Tom Berenger was in the substitute movies.
Damn.
I'll go there.
That does
and
not.
And he was the replacement.
And also great in 1941.
And a 19, yeah.
Praise does not come any higher than that.
No, that is the highest praise I could offer. So I would dissent on this one, and I would say you could probably skip it. Instead, watch Xanadu, which is to me a similar, they're both kind of not great movie musicals, but Xanadu's going so hard that you just you get to watch complete failure.
It does have ELO music.
It does have ELO.
If anyone wants to come back and watch Mamma Mia with Hal, we'll be doing that later today.
Yeah.
So just to recap, our film choices for today, we had National Treasure from Mark Gagliardi. We had The Frisco Kid from Hal Lublin, and we had Hair from Bill Corbett.
The movie, not the head.
So,
everyone come take one.
So what we're going to do is I'm going to leave you with a clip that I have chosen from a film. And then at the very end of that, we're just going to give a big round of applause for everybody and thank you very much for coming out. So here is my choice for a criminally overlooked film that maybe is middling. I don't know.
This is a video of this thing.
I'm building anticipation.
As for me, every chance I got, I returned to the old neighborhood. They looked up to me there like I was some kind of folk hero.
I love Johnny T-shirts. I love Johnny.
Johnny, can I follow in your footsteps?
Sure, kid. Here, burning a hole in my pocket.
Look, Rosie, it's Johnny Dangerously.
Mrs. Zimmer, everybody,
Over here. All right. Now, what did I tell all you neighborhood people?
Around here, you're Johnny Kelly, a law-abiding nightclub owner. Not the notorious gangster Johnny Dangerously.
Sure, and I'm the Pope.
Hey, Pope. How'd you know?
Oh, Johnny, everybody knows, except your mother and your brother. And as far as we're concerned, nobody's going to say nothing.
Thanks, Your Holiness. I tell you what, build yourself a new gym at the Vatican, eh?
Bless you, Johnny.
Hiya, Ma. How's my best girl?
Oh.
You got what you had left, Ma.
I love him, but someday I'm going to knock him on his ass.
What you cooking, Ma?
Beer.
With noodles. Great idea.
That was 1984's Johnny Dangerously.
I forgot that bit. What are you cooking, Ma?
Beer.
It's so dumb.
With noodles.
Everything in that movie is so dumb. And so when that movie begins and that 1935 comes up on the bottom of the screen and then a car runs it over, you're like, oh, this is what I'm in for.
So there you go. That was my choice. So big round of applause for Mark Gagliardi, Hal Lublin, Bill Corbett. This has been Real Crime. I'm Ken Plume. Thank you very much for coming out.